The universe is made of strange stuff. So strange, in fact, that it usually takes a scientist to understand it. But Marcus Chown wants to change that. Chown's a former radio astronomer and a science consultant. In his book called The Quantum Zoo, Chown takes the jargon and the math out of the picture and gives us a guided tour of science's greatest discoveries. He told Anne Strangechamps about the history of the atom.
It really goes back to the Greek philosopher Democritus, who in about 500 BC came up with the idea. I mean, he thought to himself, you know, if I got a stick or a piece of pottery, if I cut it in half and cut it in half again, can I keep cutting it in half forever? And it was absolutely inconceivable to Democritus that you could do that. Eventually, he reasoned, you would come to an indivisible grain, an uncuttable grain, and the Greek for uncuttable is atomos, so that's where we get the word atom. So just with the power of thought, 2,500 years ago, he came up with the idea that matter was made of these indivisible grains. And it's by combining them in different ways that you can make anything from a rose to a human being to a table. So, you know, that's the idea of an atom. In the 20th century, we discovered that, in fact, atoms were cuttable and that they were made of smaller things. And the picture that arose in the early 20th century was that an atom was very much like a planetary system, you know, where there was a tight, massive nucleus at the centre of an atom, rather like the sun, and electrons which flitted around, rather like planets. But the nucleus turned out to be 100,000 times smaller than the atom as a whole. So, you know, most of the atom is empty space. And as I say in my book, if you were to squeeze out all of this empty space in the atoms of which we're made, you could fit the entire human race into the volume of a sugar cube. And that gives you just, that gives you a real idea of how much empty space there is in matter. We are really empty space.
This may be a stupid question, but when physicists tell me things like that, I don't understand then why we have the illusion that everything is solid. If the table that I'm sitting at is made of more empty space than matter, why does it seem so solid to me?
Quantum theory. The basis of quantum theory is that the microscopic building blocks of all matter, which are quarks and things like electrons, they actually have a dual nature. They not only behave as tiny billiard ball particles, but they behave as waves, as kind of spread out things, rather like waves on a pond. And it's because they're kind of spread out and wave-like that you cannot cram the wave associated with an electron into a very small volume. And that's why atoms are so big. That's why electrons orbit in a large volume around the nucleus. Then they don't spiral in, because if they did spiral in, well, they couldn't, because you couldn't compress this wave associated with the electron into a smaller volume.
And this is another part of quantum theory that is just famously very hard to grasp, the idea that something can be both wave and particle, and further that how we observe it has some effect on which it is. Can you explain?
Yeah, it turns out that the building blocks of matter are neither waves nor particles. I mean, the truth that hit physicists 100 years ago is that the microscopic world of atoms is entirely different from the everyday world in which we live, of trees and tables and human beings. And these objects, which we think of as tiny building blocks, are like nothing in our everyday world. There are no analogies at all. We say they behave like waves or they behave like particles, but in fact, they behave as both. They are something for which we have no word and we have no physical picture, which has a wave-like facet and a particle-like facet. So if we do an experiment to observe an electron, for instance, and we are looking for a particle-like aspect, that's what we will see. And if we look for a wave-like aspect, that's what we will see. And this dual nature, you say, difficult to understand. Well, it's impossible to understand. I mean, I think this is an important point to make about physics, that we live in, you know, the everyday world where things behave in a particular way. You know, a baseball is thrown through the air and it flies in a particular way. And we, you know, we've learned to think that that's normal. But the microscopic world of atoms is entirely different to that. And the microscopic particles do not behave at all like anything in the everyday world. And there is no way that we will ever get our head around it. I mean, all we can actually do is get glimpses.
I wanted to ask you to explain some of the other kind of paradoxical things we've discovered about atoms and subatomic particles. For instance, the idea that an atom can be in two places at once, or maybe even more.
Yeah, I mean, we discovered that the microscopic world of atoms is very different from our everyday world. Not only are the microscopic entities like nothing in our everyday world, they are some cross between a particle and a wave. We can call it a wavicle, but it's nothing that we can make a picture of. But they behave in ways which are completely different to in the everyday world. And it is absolutely true that an atom can be in two places at once, the equivalent of you being in New York and London at the same time. Now, this isn't just some theoretical prediction. It's actually possible to observe an atom doing this. There is a famous experiment in physics called the double slit experiment, where you have an opaque screen with two slits in it, and you fire atoms at it, and they go through both slits simultaneously, or each, if you send the atoms one at a time, they go through both slits simultaneously, because they produce on a screen beyond something called an interference pattern. And an interference pattern can only occur if atoms mingle with each other. Well, if you send them through the two slits one at a time, how can one atom mingle with, you know, there's nothing for it to mingle with. So we can only, we do, from this experiment, we infer that each atom goes through both slits and mingles with itself. Now, the microscopic world is very, very puzzling, because all we ever see are the consequences of an atom doing two things at once. We never, ever see it do two things at once, because if we try and observe it, we don't see it. So that, you know, to that extent, the microscopic world is slightly mysterious. But certainly, if you think this is just airy-fairy, there is a technological device in the world at the moment which is creating tremendous excitement, and it's called the quantum computer. And physicists are very interested in exploiting the ability of atoms to do many things at once, to do many calculations at once. Because then they could produce computers which will make even the fastest computers we've got today appear retarded.
So one atom can do simultaneously, I don't know, 200 different equations all at the same time?
Exactly. Exactly. And this leads to some very interesting consequences, because at the moment, the biggest quantum computers that we've built, and they're not actually fully fledged quantum computers, have about 10 bits, binary bits. Well, you remember, you know, your computer at home manipulates millions of bits, billions of bits, in fact. So quantum computers are at a very, very primitive stage at the moment. But it's very easy to imagine a quantum computer built within the next 20 to 30 years that will be able to do more calculations simultaneously than there are particles in the universe. And this is very interesting, because this has philosophical implications. If a quantum computer can actually do more calculations than there are atoms in the universe, then a legitimate question to ask is, where is the quantum computer doing the calculations? I mean, where is it finding the resources to do the calculations, because there isn't enough physical matter in the universe for it to do the calculations. And prominent physicists like David Deutsch at the University of Oxford say that the quantum computer is forcing on us the idea of there being parallel realities. One interpretation of quantum theory is that when an atom can do many things at once, it actually does these different things in separate realities.
This is the idea of parallel universes, that there's more than one universe, they're just layered on top of each other.
Absolutely, like the pages of an infinite book.
So if a quantum computer can work in several different parallel universes at the same time, and if an atom can be in two places at the same time, why can't I?
You are. If the theory is correct, then every time there is a quantum process, an atom can maybe go to the left or go to the right, it goes both ways in different realities. So the universe continually bifurcates, it splits into new realities. So there are an infinite number of realities containing copies of you, some of whom who are having this pretty much the same conversation I'm having with you, others who are interviewing someone else, or you know, others where you were not born, others where the Earth was never created. You know, this is a dramatic change in our view of reality. You know, we're discovering that the universe is unbelievably amazing. You know, I mean, I just think that it is mind-blowingly amazing. I mean, Newton was a very religious person, and Newton saw no conflict, for instance, between his belief in God and, you know, his interest in science, because he thought he was laying bare the mind of the Creator, you know. And I think that if you believe in God, then you just think, wow, hasn't God made a fantastic universe? If you don't believe in God, you think, well, it's a fantastic universe.
Marcus Chown is a former radio astronomer and the author of the book The Quantum Zoo. Anne Strangechamp spoke with him.